It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the Be One Change One podcast, where our mission is to help listeners define values, practice integrity, and inspire change.
Our vision is to mentor men and empower them to achieve more by taking responsibility for shaping their own lives.
He's Cass, an evolving man who has been shaped by adversity and continues to grow through his imperfections.
And he's Roscoe, an imperfect work in progress that tries to suck less every day.
Between us, we have over 40 years of Air Force fighter pilot experience with countless hours as trainers, instructors, and mentors.
Join us and learn to take responsibility for your own life as we dive into subjects from leadership to resilience to vulnerability.
Be the one who changes their course. Be decisive, driven, and purposeful. Set the example for others. Lead. We wish we'd had this show when we were younger men.
Be the one.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Figuring it out.
Hour and a half. To just to figure out the technology.
Yeah.
and the sad part is it's still going to be screwed up, and we're going to have to just get used to it and get better. So practice makes perfect, or perfect practice makes perfect, or some shit like that. Yeah. I don't know.
We're figuring it out.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue. Just the practice makes perfect thing. Good segue into our topic today.
Yeah. Yeah. So we thought we'd talk about what kind of rooted this for me was I was talking with Daniel the other day, and he played some pretty competitive soccer through high school and in some pretty competitive club leagues and things like that, and had a lot of adversity that he had to go through. He broke his collarbone really bad one season, and just the recovery from that and some of those things. And I was just thinking, you know, sports is something that most of us have been exposed to at some point in our life. And there's just a lot of that. Now, like, we've talked a lot about resiliency and opportunity and, you know, just all those pieces, positive mental attitude and things like that. And I think sports is a good way to kind of maybe tie all of those things together a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially for you, because you've not only played sports, but then you've coached it at high levels. Right.
Yeah, that's a whole nother game.
You know, and so, but there's all those things that you learn about that, the teamwork that goes into it, you know, and a lot of it's transferable to things that you and I experience in the fighter squadron too, with high performance teams and things of that nature. So I just thought it might be a good way to kind of wrap up and kind of tie up a lot of the things that we've talked about so far in the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, the episode that stands out just right off the bat was the 10 things that require no talent. And that's something that I think one of the biggest takeaways from kids being part of a club or being part of a sport, regardless of which sport it is, male, female, big sports, little sports, individual sports. Although there are different things that you would take out of a team sport than an individual sport for sure. But those intangible or soft skills, as we kind of referred to them in that episode, things like showing up on time, prepared, wearing the right uniform, you know, having all your equipment, having everything in place, ready to go, having been fed, hydrated already, being able to pay attention to the things that are going on around you, the coaching, the attitude that you have to bring, all those things, those soft skills, never mind the physical fitness that you're getting and all that, you know, and I mean, just all of my boys, all of them, even Colin, the bonus kid, all sports guys. Tyler started playing football when he was like 8 or 9 years old. Caleb started playing when he was 6. His two older brothers were playing tackle football. So I took Caleb down, and at 6 years old, they only had flag available for him. Mm-hmm. And so I went and talked to the head of the league, because Caleb's adamant that he's going to play ball like his big brothers, right? So I talked to the guy, and he goes, "Hey, as long as you don't care, I don't care. All right, fine, sign him up." And he ended up rocking it. He did great. He ended up playing quarterback a little bit that season. He's a little run out there. And when they're so little like that, you know, they're little bobbleheads. Helmets are bigger than their shoulder pads a lot of times. But when you take from 6 years old all the way up through high school graduation last season, 18 years old, I mean, there's a lot of good lessons and disciplines that you take away from that.
Yeah, for sure. And that was what I was going to say. Like, a lot of the stuff that you were just talking about right there is discipline, right? There's a lot of discipline that's associated in the effort that you put into a sport, because it's not just the showing up on time. It's not just the commitment to go to practices and all the time that you invest in that, but it's the physical fitness piece of it, right? What are you doing, potentially on top of just practices and stuff like that to stay in shape, especially in the off season, you know? Or, I mean, I used to be in the field back on the other side of our house on a regular basis with Danny and Senna. I still got goals hanging up in my garage from being out there, you know, having them do footwork and drills and passing the ball and shooting and just all those kinds of things. So there's a lot of discipline that goes into that. And there's a lot of resiliency that goes into it too, right? Because you get nicked up and banged up as you go through a season of whatever sport you're playing. And you find ways to kind of grunt through the injuries and the soreness and the stiffness and find a way to get out there and try to perform at the highest level that you can each time that you step on the field or, you know, the basketball court or the volleyball court or whatever the case may be. So,
well, that develops a little bit of a mindset of, I can do this, you know, being sore, being tired, being hungry, you can still execute. And you know, just take the sports and the lessons that we're going to talk about in the next 45 to 50 minutes or so. And then what we did in a fighter squadron, the point is you're part of a team. You're part of something that's bigger than you. Right. And you have to do your role. You have to execute your role. And especially in the military, they don't care if you've eaten or not. You have to execute, man. And I've flown on an empty stomach. I've flown when I was tired before. I've flown when I had nothing but a dip of skull and some coffee, you know, and you have to do it. Same thing as showing up on game day.
How many times did you take off in Iraq or Afghanistan and you're fragged for like a 4-hour bowl and, you know, next thing you know, with a helmet bag full of Rippets, and a Gatorade bottle.
Yeah.
And hopefully enough piddle packs to get you through it all.
Oh, I've started that show.
And
it's not fun.
Yeah, I peed in my Gatorade bottle before because I didn't mission plan well.
Yeah.
But then next thing you know, you're turning around and you're landing 10 hours later, you know, because you get re-rolled and you're supporting some tasking on the ground now.
Because the job doesn't give a fuck.
It doesn't. Yeah, they don't care.
The job doesn't care if you've eaten or not.
And you've heard of the 40% rule, right?
What's that?
The SEALs talk about.
Uh-huh.
So it's more of a physical fitness thing, but... You know, research has shown that your mind will quit well before your body.
Yes.
Is at the point of quitting?
Yes.
And the SEALs talk about the 40% rule. That's what I've heard from a couple of them anyways, which is that basically when you're at the 40% of what your body can do, your mind will want to start to give up.
Oh,
which means you still really have about 60% of what you're capable of doing in reserve.
I haven't heard of that.
But your mind is telling you, I can't go anymore. We can't go any further. This hurts too much. This is too tired. Well, dude, you're not even close to doing everything that your body is capable of still doing and completing. So
then I guess that becomes the challenge then, is how do you open up that other 60%?
Well, that's the mental aspect of it, right? Because like we've talked about before, for guys that talk, everybody that talks about BUDS and having gone through BUDS, right? It's more of a mental exercise. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's a physical exercise as well.
Yeah.
They beat you down, right?
Well, the point of the physical though is to get to the
possible,
mental.
But that's it. It's to get, see if you're going to push back that 40% or not. Like, are you the guy that can tap into that 60% reserve and just keep going?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that stat specifically. I mean, not the exact science. I completely nerded out on that yet, but it makes complete sense for one. And then I think, you know, anybody who's started any kind of physical fitness program or diet and exercise or anything like that, well, I mean, this is why New Year's resolutions fail at a rapid pace, because you're doing something drastic to your system and you didn't build the baseline habits to support these drastic changes that you're doing. That's probably step one. You have this great idea that, you know, on January 1st, I'm going to start going to the gym 5 days a week, but you haven't built the habit of doing those types of things. You're destined to fail, man. And this is kind of my litmus test when I get ready to start something like this or change my program or change my diet or whatever. I ask myself first, is this something I can do for the rest of my life? If the answer is yes, then I'll give it a shot. If the answer is no, then I probably need to tweak it. You know, these fad diets, the Atkins, like you can't eat bacon for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. Just, it's not going to work. It's not tenable to do that. But you can eat healthy choices for mm-hmm. the rest of your life. You know, maybe a light breakfast. Maybe you limit your breakfast to a couple of hundred calories or something like that. I'm not necessarily a calorie counter, but that's kind of the way I break it down anyways.
Yeah. And I think what's important, and one of the reasons that I thought this might be a good episode to talk about too, is because I noticed when I was talking to Daniel, you know, at first when I asked him the question, like, what'd you learn from playing sports? The question kind of caught him off guard, and yeah. he was kind of, you know, trying to think through some things. And most of his answers weren't very granular. It was kind of overarching big
abstract
picture.
Kind
yeah.
of stuff.
You know, and I'm like, well, what about this? And what about that? And, you know, there's a lot of, and so I think if guys think about this and actually spend some time thinking about the sports that they played in and some of the situations or environments they were in, there's a lot of good takeaways that you yeah. can pull from that to remind yourself that you're probably more resilient or disciplined or capable mm-hmm. than you may remember being. And the good example for Daniel was when he broke his collarbone. So he went loose ball. He goes screaming down the field. He's fast and he's running full speed. Goalie's coming out of the box. He and the goalie get to the ball at about the same moment. Danny jumps to go over this kid, and his foot catches the goalie's shoulder. He does about two flips midair, and he comes down on his shoulder. And he basically breaks his collarbone, but not like in the middle. He basically broke it where it goes into the shoulder
oh,
joint.
Oh, yeah.
So he is laying on the ground in agonizing pain. And I go running out there in a... Like the doctors were surprised that the bone didn't actually come through the top of his shoulder.
Dang, man.
Because you could see it pushing up. So long story short, he ends up having to have surgery. He has a metal plate put on his collarbone to hold it in place for 2 years. Mm. And then he had to have surgery 2 years later to get it removed.
Take it out, yeah.
But so when they put it in, you know, he's a skinny kid. When there's not a lot of meat up here
yeah,
anyways,
it's uncomfortable.
You know? So yeah. the edge of that plate was always sticking up against his skin. So when he went back to play soccer the next fall, we had to get him like one of those football undershirts that has the little thin pads across the top.
Oh, like,
of the shoulder.
Like a quarterback shirt.
Yeah, just yeah. to give him yeah. a little more padding so that if he went down, and I was talking about this, I'm like, well, think about how much resiliency and like courage it took for you to get back on the mm-hmm. field, because, you know, he's running around out there and he was a little timid at first, which is understandable. Yeah. And I'll never forget, man, the first time he went down on a play and landed on his shoulder, like he was freaking out because he was so worried that he broke it again
yeah.
or, you know, maybe
that's scary, man.
Or maybe that little piece popped through the skin. Mm-hmm. And so he's like touching and he's, you know, you can see the anxiety on him, you know, and it took a couple months, the first couple months of playing with it before he really got comfortable again. But the point is that he did it, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people
yeah.
could have shirked away and been like, I'm not until that play comes out, I'm never doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and he got himself out there and he took those risks and those chances and,
yeah.
you know, performed. And so I just thought that was kind of a cool story about like showing him, look, dude, you've had times in your life where you've been really courageous and resilient mm-hmm. and fought through some adversity, you know, in some scary situations, but looked it in the face and said, I'm yeah. going to do this anyways.
Well, there's always going to be a chance, I think, to take a lesson learned out of a situation. And sometimes that lesson learned is don't do that again.
Yeah.
And I think that's completely fair to say. However, there are times where you're like, hey, man, if you're going to ride, you got to learn to fall.
Yeah.
And you got to get back on the horse.
Yeah.
And you might get bucked off again, but you learn from it. And, you know, maybe you try to tuck yourself a little bit, protect yourself when you fall or something like that.
When he was younger, he was a little bit all thrust and no vector, yeah. you know, and everything yeah, was full speed, you yeah. know. And so I think he did learn how to temper that a little bit mm-hmm. and maybe think a little more situationally and what was smart and what wasn't smart at times to do.
Yeah.
Well, definitely.
As the boys have grown older and participated in events like this, be it sports or just being rugged with their friends or whatever, you naturally just learn to control your body a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember Nikki.
That's true.
Nikki, one summer, he grew so much over a summer that we literally had to reteach him how to run.
Yeah.
When it came football season, we go out there and he's running around like,
yeah.
And we're like, holy crap, dude. So I no kidding pulled him off to the side and I'm like, hey man, you just need to practice like jogging.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the basics here, back to the fundamentals. But I have a similar story about Caleb with the injury thing. We were doing a tournament, a football tournament. We'd actually ran the table and won a championship that season with very few injuries. And it was amazing that we got through and we played some really hard football that year. We decided to play this tournament down in the middle of Phoenix down here. And there's teams coming from New Mexico and Colorado and all over the place over here. So we go out the first night and we play this team. I think they were from Northern Arizona or something, not from around here, but we mopped the floor with them, right? Everybody got to play. It was great. Well, the next day it's the semifinals and a team out of New Mexico, and they were big. They were a big team and we weren't big. We were kind of fast and we had some talent. And I think we had pretty good coaching, and that's not patting myself on the back. I think collectively we did a good job of teaching the kids that they were capable of more than they thought they were.
Right.
So we go out there and we're holding our own against this team. Right. And I'm the offensive coordinator / head coach, and I'm calling some plays, and I'm just trying to poke holes in this defense. And they had a middle linebacker that was like super duper aggressive, right? And one of their defensive ends was super aggressive. So like, okay, I got the perfect. It's a play action pass. We're basically going to let these guys go. If you can't block them, then don't block them. I got plays where we just don't block that guy. We let him take himself out of position.
Yeah.
So we ran this play. It's called fake 21 QB option, where Caleb turns around, fakes a handoff to the fullback right up the middle. So that'll get the middle linebacker to bite for a second. And then he rolls out on a naked boot to the backside where the tight end is releasing, and he throws it to the tight end after letting the defensive end
and come off up. The block.
That defensive end blew Caleb up like five times. I mean, the play's working. We're getting 10, 15 yards at a time. I'm like, yes, keep running it. Mm-hmm. And Caleb's like, no, yeah. Stop. Well, on one of the hits, they gave us a couple of late hit penalties, which was kind of beside the point, but we're marching down, we get ready to score, and we can't quite jam it in the end zone right before half. And I think we're down 7-0 at halftime. And Caleb, on one of the hits, he had come down and he had landed stiff armed like this on the ground and
hurt his elbow.
Yeah, he hurt his elbow and it was on his throwing arm. The whole halftime, he's sitting at the end of the bench just sobbing, crying. We gave him some Motrin, told him to, you know, take a knee and try to get better for the second half. And we're getting ready to kick off the ball. And I go over to Caleb. I was like, dude, I need to know right now, are you up or are you down? And he goes, all right, Dad, I'm good. But can we just not throw the ball for maybe the first series or something? And that, right? I mean, that's just an attitude, right? Mm-hmm. And these are 12, 13 year old kids,
yeah.
Right? But we were able to, over the course of a season, teach these kids, like, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. And it's all between your ears a lot of times. You can get out there and still execute at a level if you can put that in a different part of your brain and just keep moving. And yeah. And that's exactly what he did on the sideline there, similar to what Danny was doing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I think the flip side of that, too, is also knowing when you're at the point where you can't, so that you don't hurt the team, right?
Again, there's a difference between
taking that knee when you have to.
An injury is one thing.
Because here's the other thing, that another piece of sports that I think is transferable to a lot of the stuff that we talk about. Because, you know, you may be in a work environment where you're on a team. And so I can't remember who said this, but I heard this at one point and it's always stuck with me. And it was, you know, teams with great players win a lot of games. You know, teams with great players and good scheme can make it into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Teams that play for each other win championships.
Yeah. That's part of that being part of something bigger than
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, right. That's a big, being bigger something. But that's so transferable, right? Because if you're in an environment, and this is true at work, right? If you're in an environment where you have a team of individuals that you work with, but there's no cohesion, there's no coming together, there's no drive or desire or culture that's been built that allows you guys to look out for one another and to take care of each other and to try to work for some kind of a larger objective or goal, you know, whatever that goal may be, whether it's to be the best sales team on the staff or, you know, to meet a certain metric, whatever it may be. You know, if you got a bunch of raging singletons running around, well, we've seen how that works in the fighter squadron, right? You get a bunch of raging singletons, everybody's just out there doing their own thing. Yeah. The plan's going to fall apart quick and, you know, you're going to have a few glory shots, but eventually everybody's going to be dead.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that that's so important and is such a good takeaway is, you know, when you're in those team environments, try to build that culture, try to do something that instills that building a culture of a team that wants to work for each other. And that, you know, not everybody's out for their own accolades or whatever the case may be. Right. Because that's how you're actually going to get to win.
Yeah, I think that's that me versus we kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And Well, let's just take it to what we used to do, right? I flew in a two-place cockpit my entire career. That's definitely a team sport. There's a clear division of duties. We're obviously after the same thing, safe takeoffs, safe landings, and kill things in the middle. But we had to work as a team. And then even in a single seat cockpit where we're teaching that single seat mentality, you still have to rely on your teammates, your wingman,
your foreship.
If you're having an emergency, who do you call? You call the soft to back you up. He's one G0 knot sitting there with the checklist, man. He can keep you calm, read things for you while you're hand fisting the jet. So this idea that you're on an island and you're going to conquer by yourself, man, it's not false. True. So even great tennis players, one-on-one type golf players, athletes, these guys still have a team behind them. You know, the NASCAR driver has a pit crew, the golf, he has a coach and a caddy and all these people that are trying to help him out. So the message I think on that, at least on this subject, is, dude, you're part of, you have help, reach out to people, talk to people, rely on your teammates, learn from them.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot that you can learn about leadership in those situations too, because a great example, again, just going back to those conversations I was having with Daniel about this, was when he was playing high school soccer, coach was okay.
Yeah.
Not a great motivator, not a great culture builder. Didn't really bring the team together necessarily. Was very offensive minded, not really defensive minded. Danny played defense for the most part. And so, you know, the first couple weeks he's coming home and he's really frustrated because there's all this stuff going on about how we're going to get the ball downfield, but there's no real discussion about playing overlap and how the defense needs to work in order to protect the goal and, you know, swap assignments based on guys being out of position and things like that. And I'm like, well, Danny, just start talking to the guys on the back line and start telling guys what to do. And like, this is your opportunity to take charge a little bit in lieu of you guys not getting instruction back there, because he was playing for a college level coach on his club team. And this guy was awesome. And he had taught them all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, start teaching that. Start be a leader on that backfield and teach these guys what they need to do. And so he did, and they started working overlap and they got so much better as the year progressed. And it was all absent of any real coaching from anybody. And it was just,
that could be by design too. I know in the preseason when I would bring a team together, you know, I mean, I started every season with the same speech. I'd hold up a football. Guys, this is a football and that's a football field. Let's go. And it was back to the fundamentals, basics, how to touch the ball, how to line up, all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't introduce defense for probably 4 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And that was by design, because offense, just by nature, and this is American rules football, not soccer, but American rules football, offense is so much more precise.
Yeah.
In defense, especially,
it's a little more free will,
especially, you know, up through probably, you know, the middle of high school levels, you can get away on defense with just athletes making plays. If you can kind of get them in the right position, then they can read and react and kind of do the thing. And then, you know, some of the higher end football teams, and then definitely in college, is where you get into really calling defensive plays and having specific 11 people doing 11 specific things that are very, you know, designed to work together, but combat one specific thing on the offensive side. So I put my economy of effort into teaching the offensive stuff. And I was like, man, if I can just teach them the basics of a 4-3 defense cover two, then I'll be doing good. Get these guys in position, and then they can see the receivers coming, or they can feel their run fits, or you know, whatever the case may be. So there could have been some of that in there, but you're absolutely right, man. That doesn't prevent the team member from stepping up. Based on my experience, you know, I've played soccer or football for a few years, and I've been a defender for a long time. I know some of the basics, and I can help you guys at least start to see some of the reads, or you know, turn your hips the right way, or whatever. So yeah, take those leadership opportunities.
Well, yeah, and that's opportunity, right? Like we've talked about, there's opportunities all around us to delve into some of those things and learn how to do some of those things, even at a very young age that we may not be exposed to. And that was courageous for Daniel to do to a certain extent too, because he's like me, he's an introvert, man. He didn't like to step out.
That's good for him though.
He's not a big, you know, loudest voice in the room kind of yelling.
Pretty loud in my headset right now.
Yeah, sorry. But so, you know, those are all those takeaways and things that you can do that kind of, I think, tie a little bit together the stuff that we've been talking about through just the analogy of sports to a certain extent.
Yeah, man. The whole teamwork piece of it, there's so many so many little things. You have to know when to be a leader and when to be a follower. You know, sometimes you have to shut up and color. And if it's your chance to lead, then step up and lead. If it's your chance to follow, dude, fall in line and execute your role at a high level. That was what I always taught my kids, man, is regardless of what's going on, regardless of where you are on the field, what position I put you in, I just need you to execute that role at a high level. It's one-on-one, you versus the guy across from you. And I don't care if you're a receiver or a linebacker or a down lineman, you have to win that battle. And if 11 people win their individual battles, the play is going to be a success most of the time.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it's a mindset thing because you end up, you know, when the kids are growing up, they have to be taught these lessons. It's just not like inherent to them innate. They don't understand these things. At some point, you have to be taught a lesson that I can't necessarily be worrying what Cass is doing over here. I have to assume that Cass is doing his job because I have to focus 100% of my attention on doing my job.
Yeah.
If I'm worried about what Cass is doing, then that means I'm failing at mine. You only have 100% of bandwidth. If you're giving 20% to Cass, then I'm not giving but 80% to Roscoe. And that's going to be, you know, nobody's winning it that way.
Yeah, it's the same in fighter squadrons, right? On air-to-air flows, you're handing out targeting responsibilities and assignments, and you're expecting guys to shoot based on the shot doc that was briefed and be on the right flow based on the flow call and you know, be out when they're supposed to be out. And
where do you see four-ship flight leads and instructors start to struggle when they're going through the program? It's when now I have to worry about these other guys. I have to pay attention to what number four is doing on the range so that he doesn't kill himself on pop.
Exactly.
You know? And but that comes with experience and it comes with being taught how to do those things. I'd say when you're starting out, you know, for the guys that are transitioning into young adulthood and getting started in a profession, man, just learn your job and do that really well. I told the story about, it doesn't matter if you're the coffee getter on the team. You should get coffee so well that they plant a flag or a sign in your hometown that says the best coffee getter in the world lives here.
Yeah.
Like that's the level of execution. And that it won't be long and you won't be a coffee getter anymore.
That's right.
You're going to get bumped up. So just focus on what you do and do that very well.
Yeah. And do it. Do what you're taught to do. Yeah. So do it the way you're taught to do. And then as you start to understand it more, you can start to look for ways to find efficiencies or make it better or whatever the case may be, but you know, more efficient, faster, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, And even in a career that's as dogmatic as what we came from, you know, the military is very structured and dogmatic for a reason, but even in that there's room for good ideas, improvements, speed and efficiency, things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that sports really does too, is it teaches, hopefully it teaches, you know, personal accountability and responsibility, right? Because like you were just talking about, dude, you're responsible for your assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you know, I mean, we didn't, when we were growing up in high school, we didn't really have a lot of film review, you know, cause they have like one camera way up in the top of the bleachers that caught most of the field. And so it was kind of hard.
Little blobs.
It was really hard.
Two pixels running across. Yeah.
But you did have that accountability for, you know, this was your assignment. You screwed this assignment up. Here's the lessons learned. Yeah. This is how we fix it next time. Ready, ready, hike, move out, move forward. Right. And so, and I think that's so important because that's a lot of what we talk about on the podcast too, right? Is dudes, at some point in your life, you've got to start to take personal responsibility and accountable for your actions, your choices, the decisions that you've made, because until you do that, you're not going to move forward and be able to start to fix any of those pieces in your life. And I think sports does that. Like sports teaches you that because you're forced to have those situations and you're forced to deal with failure. Because guess what? Sometimes you screw the assignment up. Sometimes you miss it, right? Sometimes you don't win the game, you know, and it's your fault potentially. And so I think Ted Lasso made this famous, but the whole be a goldfish thing.
Yeah.
The first time I ever heard that was actually at weapons school. Nett Peterson was one of my instructors. Great dude. Love you, Nett. And we were in a debrief and he's like, you guys know how long the memory of a goldfish is? And we're all like, what is he talking about? He's like, it's 10 seconds. He goes, goldfish swim around in their tank and they go, oh, there's a castle. Oh, there's a castle.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you guys need to be goldfish. Like, you know, you screwed it up today. Forget it. Flush it.
That's great.
Take it away. Yeah. Go out there and execute it better tomorrow. Right. Like be a goldfish. So,
and that is a hard lesson. I still struggle with that lesson.
Yeah, I do too.
I will carry things for days. You know, if it's something very significant, I'll carry it around for a week, maybe. We were talking about an experience that I had in the last few days that it's been weighing on me for, it weighed on me for a good 36 hours or so. And I'm kind of moving out of it a little bit, but you know, I think part of that though, at least, and I'm going to talk about me specifically, why I'm so hard on myself on some of those things is because I expect so much. I have set a standard, and when I don't meet that standard, I get very frustrated with myself. And I don't know, man, maybe it's that whole extreme ownership kind of thing, which, I mean, we can argue the goods and the bads of that. Yes, you need to give yourself some grace, but if you don't have a standard, a personal standard that you're striving to, then what are you doing? You know, and
yeah.
And when I don't meet that standard, that aggravates the shit out of me. And then I go back and I sulk and I debrief on it and all that. But dude, the mentality that I used to teach my football players was, hey, guess what? In 30 seconds, we're lining up to do it again. So you got about as long as it takes from you to walk from wherever you are to the huddle to get over that shit, because I need you paying attention now in the huddle to what's the next play. I might run the same play again and give you another shot. But if your head's in the gutter over here, not thinking about your responsibilities, you're probably not going to get that opportunity.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right, man. The responsibility comes down to you, not always the accountability. Your coaches will hold you accountable. Your leaders at work will hold you accountable. Your teachers, whomever it may be. But in the end of the day, you're the one that's responsible for moving forward or staying where you're at.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's good to be personally accountable too and go, hey, you know, and we learned this in the fighter squadron as well, right? If you're the kind of force ship flight leader, IP, or weapons officer for that matter, because I've seen weapons officers do this too, and it's a complete fucking foul. But if you get in, if you're in a debrief and something went wrong and you're trying to lay blame on everybody else.
Yeah.
When it really, the responsibility lies at your feet. And you're trying to cover it up somehow because your ego's so big that you can't just go, hey, dudes, I fucked this up and let the lesson learned come out of it. Then fuck you, man.
Well, it's been documented on the podcast before. My big three and my little three. My big three were attitude, attention, and effort. And my little three were accountability, responsibility, and humility. All of those, all six of those came from coaching football. And I came up with those because, I mean, even the younger kids, when we were coaching 8 or 9 year olds, I can get them to remember three things. And then over the course of a season, you teach them what that means. And, you know, like practice one, I just get them to where they can remember the three words. As the season goes on, I start teaching them what it means to have that. And what you're talking about is that humility piece of it. Dude, be able to stand up in front of the room and say, guys, I screwed this up. Holy shit. Let's learn something from it real quick. Because of my failure, you three guys failed. So I set you guys up. It was a bad brief, bad game plan, or just poor execution, you know, but somehow it's my fault. Let's dig around in here and find out what the root cause was, because your failure at the point of attack was really my failure to not give you the right game plan or the right tools.
That's right. And if you're in a leadership position, that's fundamentally important for you to be able to do with your team when you 100%. Make a mistake, right? Because if you're the kind of cat who's going to blame the team when everybody knows it was a mistake that you made, then that's not, like, if you want to kill a culture and you want to create division, that's the easiest way to do it right there.
That was something that I challenged my other coaches with a lot of times was, hey, when we show up to practice, I want everybody to have at least one thing that you screwed up in the game. Maybe it was a substitution that you didn't get right, or it wasn't timely. You know, if we had 12 men on the field, that's somebody's fault because somebody's tracking that stuff. You know, if we kicked it to the wrong person, somebody messed up. Right. So own up to it, man. And I would start it. I'd walk out there and be like, hey, guys, so on the game the other day, you know, I fucked up this, that, and another, whatever. And we just go around the horn on the coaching staff. And to me, that was just, not only was it admitting to the kids that we're fallible.
We're all human too.
Yeah, we made mistakes, man. And maybe the mistake that I made, not getting the right substitution in there or not getting the right play call, maybe that led to the team's failure or the specific individual not running the right routes or something when it really came back to me. But also what that's doing for the kids is it's showing them the process of you put together a game plan, you go out there and you execute it, and then what? Like there's another piece to it where you have to kind of see, well, did the game plan work, yes or no?
Yeah.
And if yes.
And was it even valid?
Yeah. Well, if the game plan worked, great. Could we have done it better?
Right.
Right? If the game plan didn't work, why? And let's find out. Let's go through that tree and let's figure out why this stuff didn't work. And that was me starting that process, standing in front of the kids, admitting my own failures, hopefully showing a little humility and saying, guys, I screwed up. Yeah. Sorry. You know?
Yeah. Going back to your, I'm going to ask you a question and you're not ready for this question. Uh-oh. And I think that's a good thing. Uh-oh. But it kind of goes back to that, you know, whether it's a standard that the organization has, like we had in a fighter squadron, or which we can go and I can go into a whole thing about why standards are so important
yeah.
to have. And we can talk about that after the question if you want, but, in that personal responsibility, accountability mm-hmm. piece too. But for you, what's the difference between winning and succeeding, right? Because you're not always going to win. Right? You don't win every game. I mean, I know you did have the great fortune of having a few seasons yeah. there where you guys went undefeated and won yeah. the championships, but I think that's rare, right? I mean, how many teams in the NFL do we see go 16-0, 17-0, and then run the playoffs all the way through the Super Bowl? It doesn't happen very often, right? There's going to be losses along the way. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you compete to win. Like, every team goes into every game, you know, with a plan and an expectation to try and win, mm-hmm. but we don't always win. So what's the difference for you between winning and succeeding?
Well, I mean, that's a deep one. And that conversation can, I think, go a long ways. I'll say two things on it. One is you define success. All right. So individually in your life, whether you're a dad, a husband, a brother, a friend, whatever it is, a coworker, you define success in your relationships, in your financial aspirations, whatever those may be. If your idea of success is to become a millionaire, great. When you reach that $1 million, by your definition, you've made success. Okay. I will say that the pylon is the last season that I was the head coach, we ended up winning the championship. But our goal that season, I had two goals that season for my team. One of them was to prepare my kids for high school football. These were junior high kids, and I wanted to give them as much knowledge as I could about the game of football so that when they went to high school and they started running more complex schemes, that they understood the language, they understood the alignments and assignments and things like that. That was one of my goals. My second goal was be competitive. Now, that doesn't mean win. That means I can objectively measure whether or not we were competitive on a given day. We might not have scored as many points as the other team, but how many explosive plays did we give up? How many over-the-head touchdowns did we give up? And, you know, how many tackles for loss did we have or did they have? So I can go back and I can look at the metrics and find out if we were competitive. If we went out there and we missed every tackle and didn't complete a single pass all day, I can definitely make the argument that we were not competitive. But if you've got this back and forth, the overall yardage is, you know, within a few yards, the completions and third down percentages are about the same, then yeah, man, we were competitive. Sometimes the ball just bounces the other guy's way and there's not a lot you can do about, you know, this oblique spheroid that's bouncing around on the turf field.
Yeah.
That said, I could go back and I could look at, I could measure if we were competitive or not. So maybe that's an answer to the question is you can be competitive and you can be successful and still not win the game.
Yeah. And I think that's a great definition because I would tend to agree with you. I think success for me is just the peace of mind of knowing that I went out there and did one that I was as prepared as I could be. Yeah. And then when I was on the field, I did the best that I could do.
You could frame that as, did you meet your goal?
Meeting your goals, yeah. Right? And so, yeah. And I think what's important about that is because again, going back to Daniel's example with high school, you know, you're going to find yourself in situations in life, whether it's work, you know, or sports mm-hmm. or whatever, where, you know, maybe not everybody's as invested as you and not everybody is moving towards the same goals. And so yeah. I think having those personal goals established while you're in those environments of, okay, well, what is the personal goal for me going to be on this day or for this game or for this season? Yeah. And then striving to meet those individual goals is a great way to measure success. Cause you could get blown out and you could be a cornerback that had, you know, two interceptions
exactly.
and, you know, under 10% completion rate on your side of the field.
Yeah.
And you did everything to shut down your side, but you know, the other side gave up ball over ball over ball. Man. Right. So
you're opening up such a big can of worms here because let's just take that into a marriage or a relationship. All right. And you set individual goals for yourself. Well, your marriage and your relationship is going to have goals as well. You know, maybe together you guys want to get to a place where you can retire early. And part of that, in order to execute that game plan and get there, your role was to get a good paying job and establish a 401k and contribute heavily to it. Well, you know what? COVID hits and you got fucking laid off.
Yeah.
Or something happens and now you're not meeting your goal, but maybe the relationship still is, or vice versa. Maybe, you know, you're just extremely happy in your job and, you know, you guys maybe changed the goal a little bit, or you decided to execute just a little bit differently. Yeah, so
shift your priorities.
Yeah. So I think, you know, from sports to your personal life, I think these things line up nicely, man. And where you can have your individual goal or you can have your team goal and still execute your individual effort at a very high level and not meet the team goal.
Yeah.
That's okay too.
Yeah.
You know, maybe next time you do some analysis and change the team goal slightly.
Yeah.
Modify it some.
Yeah. And I think if you're achieving those milestones individually and you're having that success, then that by default is winning, at least at a personal level, even if maybe the team around you isn't succeeding at the same rate or the same level.
Yeah. I think there maybe there's even another layer to this too, where, you know, let's say you're part of an organization. We'll take our squadron, for example. You know, the squadron has its goals or its mission statements or whatever, and you execute flawlessly every day and you come into work and you're just the cat's meow. You know, you are knocking it out of the park, but the squadron overall fails. They fail their inspection or they fail their mission for the day or whatever it is. Try your best not to have this me attitude of, well, I did everything I could. Well, that's great, man. But there's a bigger picture here, right? And I know that we're almost, it's very close to talking out both sides of our mouth on this, but at the same time, you are part of something that's bigger than you.
Yeah.
So while your execution, you were the cornerback and you had two great interceptions, and that's awesome. Maybe go grab the other corners 5 minutes before practice and help them with a little technique or help them see how you read those plays a little bit, you know, and maybe that elevates the team a little bit more. So now the team is going to meet their goals.
Yeah. Well, you know? And that's leadership, right? And those are opportunities for leadership. And we've talked about that too. When I've been in squadrons where the leadership wasn't that great, then in maybe you don't have the influence necessarily to make changes at the bigger level. What do you do, dude? You focus on the guys around you. You find out how to elevate the dudes around you, how to elevate the situation and the environments around you and make those better. Make it as good for the folks around you and the team that you have around you as you can.
Yeah, we talked about this early on where, you know, you're a young wingman in a squadron and maybe you have a particular skill set or talent and your buddy has a particular skill set and talent. You guys share ideas, man.
Yeah.
Sit around, go grab a coffee or a beer or something and talk about it. You know, how can I help you and how can you help me? And that makes us both better.
Yeah,
you know?
When I was a punk in Korea, we used to sit out in the hallway with dinner and we used to all talk about our sorties and what we learned and then just share all that stuff with, because it's corporate knowledge, right? It's ways that we could learn from each other so that we didn't make similar mistakes.
Well, I know you've said this before and it's worth reiterating, but your team is only as strong as your weakest link. Now, you don't want to be that guy. You also don't want your buddy over here to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, you want all of those guys to be up to a level. And like your story of your commander trying to, you know, have the flight commanders rack and stack the entire squadron and then flip those. I was just having a conversation with Caleb last night. You know, all his buddies came over to the house and I wanted like 10 minutes with him before the weekend got started. And we kind of all started going our separate ways. So we sat back in my man room. We're just BSing a little bit. And he was telling me all about his week and everything. And he's telling me stories about how, you know, he or one of his teammates did something very well. And then a few of his teammates are really worried that they're not doing well. And I was like, well, man, that's that top third, bottom third kind of thing, right? If you're a top third or a bottom third guy, if you're on the pointy end of the bell curve, either side, you probably know. You probably know that you're achieving very well or you're not achieving at all. If you're in the middle third, then it gets a little cloudy, you know, well, am I number four or am I number eight? I don't know yet. But the challenge for the top third guys is to reach back and help these other guys along. You know, if one of your guys is struggling at pushups, start taking him to the gym with you.
Yeah. Well, and if you're a leader too, I think that's why feedback is so important. Like if you're not in the habit of sitting down with folks on a regular basis, and by regular I don't mean once a week, like maybe every quarter or every half, sitting down and giving people feedback on their performance and how they're doing, and if you set a standard where they're meeting it, where they're not, you know, you've got to provide people feedback in that sense. And then you've got to look for opportunities to put people in play. Because if, and this is what we did in that squadron where you were talking about with the squadron commander who had us rank everybody and then asked, okay, well, how are you going to move the bottom third up? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you sit down, you give guys feedback and you go, hey dude, here's where you're doing really well. And here's where I need you to work. These are the areas I need you to work on, whether it was officership or leadership or even flying stuff to a certain extent. Right. And then 6 months, and then over the course of that time, you look for ways to put them into maybe a leadership position to be able to demonstrate what they can do, to show,
give them a chance,
what their value is, you know, and to learn. So maybe that's a project officer job for, you know, a TDY or something like that. So you put them in play. You got to put people in play. You don't put people in play and you don't give them feedback, then when they come up for a review and you tell them all this stuff, they're going to be like, well, I didn't know any of this was going on. But if you had had that conversation 6 months ago and then you gave them an opportunity to succeed and excel and they fall flat on their face and you've given the feedback and none of those things had changed, at that next review, when you go, hey, dude, 6 months ago, we talked about X, Y, and Z, and I gave you an opportunity right here to show that you could demonstrate these things. And this was the outcome. There's no room for them to sit there and go, oh, well, I didn't know.
Exactly. Right? Well, so, you know, and there's something that you said in there, there's a couple of things that I think that are very important is when you do give somebody, and this is from the leader's point of view, when you give somebody feedback, let that marinate a little bit, you know, give it some time. Like you said, you can't go in there every day or every week and constantly be knocking these guys down, giving them feedback, whether it's good or bad. I mean, everybody appreciates a pat on the back all the time, but what are you really doing to a guy that you do that to every day? You're not giving him a chance to focus on his shortcomings or the things that he needs to be improving on. If you constantly tell somebody that they're doing a great job, they've got no reason or motivation to try to fix anything.
Yeah.
On the other side, if you are being given, if you're receiving feedback, give yourself a little grace and a little time here and realize, you know, go back to this, the discussion that we were having earlier about the habit forming, change a little something along the way and give it some time to make the correction that it deserves. That 60-to-1 rule that I explained a few episodes ago, you know, you make a minor tweak to your daily habit or to your mannerisms or to your filing system or whatever it may be, you know, your desk organization, something. You know, I was offered some techniques one time on, how to organize my desktop on my computer and, you know, putting files around the periphery so that when I open my email, it's in the middle and then the files are around the outside where I can still see them. I was like, well, that's a great technique. And it still took me about a couple of weeks or a month or so to get it tweaked the way that I liked it. But it wasn't like, okay, well, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change everything wholesale. No. You make one or two little small adjustments and let those try to take hold. And then you build, you build on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you want to talk about personal standard stuff at all?
Well, I mean, we kind of already hit on that. I think it's important to have a personal standard. I do. If you don't have something that's out in front of you that you're chasing, then what are you doing? You're just kind of floating at maybe sports. You know, if we're talking about that specifically, maybe sports gives that to young people just inherently because they're expected to show up at a certain time. They're expected to be in formation or stretched or hydrated or whatever. You know, there's an expectation when you get out of the car and you approach the football field, there's an expectation that you're there to bring it. Like, I don't want people who are just going to be out there half-assing it and kind of jogging through the drills, man. We're only here for a couple of hours. Right. I need you locked in and engaged. And then when you go home, you can eat freaking ho-hos and play your video games. But when you're on my field, this is go time, dude. Now, I would hope that that would translate over to the rest of their life. I would hope that at some point they develop this expectation of themselves that, well, you know, my high school football coach just beat into me for 4 years that I was supposed to maintain my physical fitness and stay hydrated and eat correctly. Well, when you go to college, I mean, you've heard of the freshman 15, right?
Yeah.
That's somebody that kind of let go of their personal standard. I'm kind of in it right now. I'm doing my version of the freshman 15, but aside from a little medical stuff I got going on right now, I'm trying to get back into it because I have a personal standard and I've recognized that I'm falling short of that. And I'm like, okay, time to recage, you know, recage the little peanut gyro and get back on track.
Yeah. I think what's important about a personal standard too is it brings those things to the forefront of your mind, right? So I think what establishing a personal standard allows you to do is stay disciplined and focused in whatever that personal standard's around, if that makes sense. You know, whether that's, hey man, I'm going to be at work 5 to 10 minutes early before I'm supposed to be there every day, and I'm going to be clean cut, shaven, well dressed, ready to go, and I'm going to make sure that, you know, I'm prepared for whatever it is that I have to do at work for that day. It's, if you start to set that standard for yourself, then other things will fall into place around just the discipline that you get in, the morning routine that you have to make sure, maybe the preparation that you do the night before that allows you to get out the door on time, right? Yeah. You're not waking up in the morning realizing you don't have any shirts ironed. And now the 10 minutes that you need to do that is not 10 minutes, it's 10 minutes you don't have.
Instead of your 10-minute meditation over your coffee, now you're doing 10 minutes of shirt ironing.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, the maybe the discipline in how you break up your day and how you plan out how you're going to use your time at work to get specific tasks done that keep you ahead or prepared or whatever the case may be, right? Yeah. Like, that's how that, I think, personal standard can allow you to start to build discipline in all these different aspects of your life. That then over time become habits, and then it becomes a lot easier to kind of just continue to move out and move forward and refine those pieces.
No, I like that. And I also like the idea of moving the goalpost a little bit here and there too.
Yeah.
You know, and that way you kind of resist that natural urge or that natural gravitation towards getting stuck in a rut.
Or complacency.
And you know, this is something that I do is I kind of go through phases where I'll read some nonfiction for a long time, and then I'll read some fiction for a while. I did that week long trip out to Lemoore, and I read 4 books while I was out there. Read some great thrillers. I mean, no self-help books, no nothing. Just getting lost in a story for a long time, you know, and that's kind of how I might break that cycle up.
Yeah.
Sign up for a 5K. If you're a meathead in the gym and you'd like to bench press 400 pounds, go sign up for a 5K, man. That'll challenge you to maybe break up your routine a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
I signed up for a couple of obstacle course races.
I think it's important to continue to challenge yourself, because that is where you'll get, you know, as you start to build these habits and things become more, in some respects easier, but then just more regular, you start to also pick up efficiencies, and then you have more time. And I think it's easy in those places where you have now more time available to get complacent in that routine.
Yeah.
Instead of finding ways to challenge yourself to continue to kind of move forward in that process.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you made an interesting comment there where getting complacent in the routine does not mean that there isn't value in having a routine. Yeah. And that's something that sports really teaches you too. There is value in having a routine. Like, everybody's got their pregame ritual, or, you know, when you show up to practice, there is a flow to practice. We had a very specific flow of the events, like the way that we broke down our practices, people knew that we did our stretch and flex time, and then we went to indies, and then we went to team, and then we closed it out with a lot of high energy. That was kind of our basic construct of how we did our practices. So that routine is there. Now, how we break that up may be different from day to day. Today, we need a focus on long passes, on deep passes versus cover two coverage or something like that. So we may structure our practices so that we get there. You know, at the end of practice, instead of lining up and doing sprints every day, maybe we run no huddle offense for a little bit and we break it up. We're still getting great conditioning. I've got the kids reading and reacting. Every 12 seconds, I want to snap.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. So the importance, I think, of having a routine is that's good.
I agree.
But letting yourself get into that rut, that's having the personal standard, I think, helps you identify when you're slipping off of that slope a little.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also, like, just continuing to ask, like, I think it's really important to ask yourself questions around, okay, here's what I've squared away. What can I make better?
Yeah.
And don't overwhelm yourself with that, because at the beginning, there's probably a whole bunch of things that we can do better, right?
Yeah,
but for sure. It's the same thing when we were in the squadron, and you're learning how to fly, and you're learning how to do these things, man. Pick one thing and focus on that and drill that down a little bit. And then when you're getting comfortable with that, find the next thing and start to work on that aspect or that piece of your organization or your time management or a skill that you need to develop or something like that. Just take it a little bit piecemeal, one at a time. And what you'll find is over time, it's building blocks, just like in sports, right? At first, it's blocking and tackling. You know, it's foot placement, it's hand placement. It's, and then as you start to do those things, well, now if you're a defensive lineman, now we can get into, well, here's a swim technique.
Yeah.
Let's get that down. Well, okay. Now you're doing that well. Let's learn the next, whatever the next.
But you never lose sight of the fundamentals.
And that's how you can just building block over time and continue to improve and challenge yourself and build more skills, you know, and become more adept and just, you know, better overall.
I mean, I've seen this more times than I can count. I've employed this as an instructor, as a football coach, as a dad. So look, man, I was in a sim not too long ago. It was a four-ship TI, a tactical intercept sim, 4VX, right? And the instructor comes in. It's all B-coursers, right? And he had the standard card with all the standard red dance card, red pictures on it. And he says, we're going to do set alpha until we get it right. And we ran it like five times. And each time he'd go, okay, so the commit was great, right? And then what happened? We got to shot range and some people messed some things up. Okay, let's run it again. Let's get from commit to shot range. Good, right? And once we got that, then it was, what are you going to do in your next maneuver? And it took them about five reps to get set alpha down. I mean, we broke it down and we just kept running it. And finally we went to Bravo. We went through two sets.
Yeah.
We got through alpha and Bravo, but we did each one of them about four or five times.
Yeah.
I've done this as a dad. I've done this as a football coach. Guys, we're going to run this play until we get it right.
Yeah.
I need 11 people to get every single piece of this play correct before we move on to the next thing, because that play that we're running, there's so much that we're going to build on just by getting these fundamentals down. We're laying a foundation with these plays, with these maybe four or five core plays in our offensive handbook that we're going to build the rest of our offense off of. And if you can't execute this, there's no way you're going to be able to execute that.
Yeah. I used to do the same thing as an instructor with the young four-ship flat leads that were struggling in air-to-air. I'd get a sim at Shaw or wherever we were, and we'd go over for an hour and a half sim time, and all we would do is work cold flow.
Yeah.
And so
same thing.
And what, for guys that don't know what cold flow is when you're doing air to air, you know, you have your initial flow decision where you go down track, you take shots, but then at some point you have to turn your four-ship around.
Hey, check this out. Hold up. We're on video now.
Oh yeah.
So we can do this.
Oh, that's right.
So we went from doing this to now we're doing this.
Now you got your tail to the guys that are behind you. You're timing out shots, that whole picture behind you is going to change because some of those shots are going to work, some of them aren't. They may have maneuvered when you turn cold. You don't have radars down track, so you're not sure. You can't see on your own radar scope what the picture is or what the picture's turning into. So you go cold. We call that cold flow. You're running cold for, you know, 30 to seconds or so, letting the dust settle and all that good stuff. Shots time out, parts and pieces start and fall to the ground.
Yeah.
Kind of get a semblance of where your four-ship is, and then it's picture target flow, man. It's, okay, what's the picture behind me? So learning how to build a mental picture in your brain from the comm that your weapons director gives you for what the picture is behind you. What's the semblance of my four-ship? And that semblance isn't just kind of where are we in space, but it's also, is there any lateral difference to us? Is somebody closer to the leading edge than the other ones? Because that might affect my targeting decision. And then what's my targeting game plan going to be? And then what's the flow decision going to be? Are we going to short skate? Are we going to bonsai? Yep. What are we doing? And so picture target flow. And we would just over and over and over different pictures just to practice the calm and the pacing and building the mental picture. And then picture target flow.
But you're building on those foundations.
Yeah.
You're laying the foundation and then you're building step by step. Okay. On the next two or three that we do, man, I just want you to remember what the picture was. If you have to jot it down,
I want
to put the sim on pause and you're going to regurgitate to me what you just heard.
That's exactly what I do.
So that you can comprehend it and know. And now you're starting to build this mental model of what's behind you. Because when you turn around, dude, they're going to be shooting back.
Yeah.
You know? So you got to build on that kind of stuff. Do it as a dad, right? Put your kids in positions to where they see the same lessons over and over and over again, so that eventually that stuff gets beat into them.
Yeah.
You know, it's now on the other side of that, if you're one of these people that are struggling, I know I've told this story on the podcast before where I had a tactical intercepts ride and this kid was getting really down on himself and he was starting to kind of get the poor me's a little bit about it. Man, you gotta have a little bit of grace, especially in something that's very complicated. If you're learning a new job, if you're day one of your new job, dude, give it some time, man. Yeah, it may take you a couple of months to learn this.
It's gonna take some time to get your arms around it.
First day, remember how to log into your computer tomorrow when you come in. Like small victories, right? Yeah. Build some momentum on the small victories. Sharpen your pencils so that tomorrow when you come in, you got something to write with.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. Well, that's about all I got on this. Yeah, dude. You got anything else to add?
Man, we could talk sports and how that applies to life. I got a chapter in my book that says everything you need to know in the game of life, you can learn from football. And I really think that's, in a lot of ways, that's true, man, because there's so many good tangible and intangible lessons that you get from playing team sports, how to interact with other people, social dynamics, how to follow instructions, bring a good attitude every day and listen and give effort to the things that you do. And I can tell you just anecdotally, for me, I went to a very small high school in Northern Louisiana, and I got to play like every sport. I lettered in like five or six sports. I mean, very unique opportunity that some of the kids around here in these bigger high schools just don't get. You know, from football season, the day that football season was over, the next Monday morning, we went into basketball season. And then when basketball season was over, spring sports started, and I was running track, tennis, and golf all at the same time. Hmm. So, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I got to dip into a lot of things, team sports, individual sports, you name it. All of my kids played sports. I can tell you, man, that I am a better person having been part of a team and knowing how team dynamics work and how to follow and how to lead and those kinds of skills that you learn through that. I'm a way better person than had I been if maybe I wasn't part of that. So the encouragement out there that I would have for the listeners is, if you're a dad, get your kids into sports. Yeah. Male, female, doesn't matter. Get them into sports doing something. If you've never been part of a team in your life, go join a club, right? If you're a 20-something that maybe just got out of college, or hell, even a 30 or 40-year-old that's never been part of a team, man, you just can't replace it. Go join the Toastmasters in town and just absorb what's going on in those rooms sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good advice, man.
Yeah. I've been part of a team since I was about 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know what I would. I mean, even this is team dynamics right here.
For sure.
Yeah. So what else you got, man?
That's it, man. Happy Veterans Day.
And to you.
Yeah.
Be the
one.
Good
to see you. It's been a while.
Hey, before we sign off, we can't just walk away without acknowledging that we just ran, what does it say, an hour of video.
Nice.
Hopefully this is going to become the standard. We're obviously going to make it a lot better.
Yeah, we'll try.
Guys behind the scenes, you don't have any idea what it took, how many consecutive miracles it took to get this off the deck today. But
yeah.
Hopefully this will be, we'll keep making it better.
Right on.
So,
all right, man, be the one.
Be the change.